This is Geek News Central. My name is Todd Cochran, coming to you from FEMA Region 5 in the new media production studio hideout designed by Audimute.com in Coldwater, Michigan. The lead stories as we begin week 9 of the national lockdown. Elon Musk says, go ahead, arrest me. Why or would you trust the World Health Organization's COVID-19 app? I've got an amazing SpaceX story as we lead to the manned launch on May 27th. And I have a great story straight from the Matrix. I want to welcome you to episode 1446 of the Geek News Central podcast for Monday, May 11th. This show is sponsored in part by GoDaddy.com and listeners just like you. Great deals from GoDaddy can be found at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. You can support this show today at geeknewscentral.com/insider. Hey, everyone, we are live. We're up and running. And thank you for being here. If you're checking us out for the very first time, if you're on Facebook, make sure you say hello and just check in. That would be great. Those of you listening via podcast, hey, thank you for being here and thanks for being part of the family. For those of you checking the show out for the very first time, I want you to encourage you to get over to geeknewscentral.com and subscribe to the show. You can subscribe to the newsletter on the website while you're there as well. You can always listen to the show on blueberry.com or on your smart home device as well by saying the keyword to activate that device and say, play the podcast, Geek News Central. You can join our chat room at geeknews.chat. That's a Mastodon chat server for the geeks that are out there. Come on over and get involved in our chat room. Of course, you can join our Slack channel or our Discord channel, either one. It's a great way to stay connected with the family here. Of course, you can always contact me via email, and that's geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com, or, of course, on Twitter, @geeknews. You can follow me on Facebook, and that's where we're at tonight, mostly watching the live. And then again, for those of you that joined the live, thanks for joining. Again, make sure you say hello. We appreciate you being here. Of course, partner shows are all linked to geeknewscentral.com. It includes a GNC Week in Review by our executive producer here, Kirk Corliss, The Gadget Professor with Mr. Don Bain, The Pro Gear Site written by my team, The Podcast Legend Show, and The Podcast Insider Show, which I do with my team at Blueberry. You can always pick up Ohana Gear at cafepress.com/Ohana Store. And this show is sponsored by the longest running continuous sponsor of a podcast, and that's our good friends over at GoDaddy.com. We've got a great set of deals over there for you at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. Again, geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. And again, all these codes are not expiring. They'll work day after day, month after month. 30% off new product purchases, $499.coms. $1 a month economy hosting for the first year. $1 a month economy hosting for the first year. It includes a free domain and $1 a month managed WordPress hosting. Yes, I'll say it again. $1 a month managed WordPress hosting for the first year includes a free domain name. The best deals in hosting. You cannot find anything any better. If you do, let me know. That is the best deal out there for getting a website and getting a domain and getting up and started. No one else in the industry offers anything like that. Of course, you can get it for those of you that are business owners. Free trial of GoDaddy Website Builder. Your choice of personal, business, or business plus plans. Again, we want to thank GoDaddy for being a longtime sponsor here of the show. And lots of great stuff going on here, folks. And thanks to GoDaddy again. So, hey, let's talk just a little bit about what's been going on. I got some feedback from the last show. A couple of messages that were, I got some of you a little upset. I didn't get any middle fingers no middle fingers or an inappropriate word in email, but, wow, interesting. So what was nice weather here in Michigan? It's cold. They even had sent me a snow warning last night. Couldn't believe it. And you know, it's interesting. I had a pretty full weekend. So Saturday, Friday, typical day, work day. Saturday, did the new media show. Had some things. One last, you know, I'm beginning to worry about the load limit of my ceiling because I've run a lot of cables in the overhead just to keep things looking neat. And I think based upon a part that came in from B&H, because I needed one part, an $89 part from B&H, came in, got everything hooked up, tested this new audio path. I just really am over the moon. So the studio, the demo studio, I just cannot imagine anything where it needed. I was thinking maybe I was going to have to put a mixer over there, but I got what's called a FET head. It's a inline preamp, worked perfectly, no noise, quiet as a jailbird. I mean, it was perfect. And just thinking about all those scenarios and everything. So now no excuses. And I've got a backup of stuff. I've got a demo, a whole bunch of things that's now in work. So that's going to take place. And I'm going to do the same approach for the green screen room. Now that I've kind of figured out exactly everything that I needed over here, I've got 90% of what I need already on this side. And I'm going to reuse that little adapter when I need to, so it can go between rooms, so I don't have to buy two of those. And I just need to hook up have a cable in one of the audio jacks. And I will have officially filled the mixer board full with that last piece. Won't be using wireless here in the studio, at least not when it's just me or one other person that may be doing a demo. So that's, to me, is just like, woohoo, really, really, really exciting. So just can't believe that finally I've kind of got it nailed, and I'm really pleased where everything's at. A lot of things to manage, see, do. The only thing I really kind of think I might need at some point is a teleprompter, but I figured I can put an iPad up next to the camera, and that won't be too much of an offset. It'll be fine. We'll go that way. So one thing I was going to talk about a little bit here is it came into town Saturday, left the house a little bit late. I got everything ready for the new media show, and I was going to just zip over and grab some food. I think I was going to, where was I going? I think I was going to Taco Bell. And I rolled into Taco Bell, and there's like 30 cars in the drive-thru. And I'm like, nope, not enough time for that. Whereas 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks ago, on the height of all this, I'd be the only car that would be pulling up to going through the drive-thru. There would be no wait, in and out in 3, 4 minutes. So I whipped around and went down the street to another place, and it was full too. And I didn't get lunch. I just had to come back to the studio. I didn't have time to stay in a drive-thru that was 20 cars long. And, so today, about 12:20, my mom was working next door at the laundromat. I went over there, said, "You hungry?" And we talked about something, and I just went and got us two hamburgers at a local place that, is a normal food chain, and that place was busy. So I think what I'm seeing is, I guess I'm, how I can tell the heartbeat of what's going on, at least in this small community, is the activity at the drive-thrus. Really, really, really busy. I mean, 10, 20 cars deep, and I'm like, wow, I'm just going to have to change up here and figure something else out. And I, for dinner here, I had brought some leftovers and I warmed that up and had it here just a little while before I started the show. So, I'm at this point kind of tired of the offerings that are available. I'm ready, really, 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 really ready for some variety of some different places that may open up here once we get to the end of the month, at least here in Michigan, potentially. I don't know. It's, those that are open can be open, but there's a lot of places that are not. So anyway, finished up here Saturday afternoon. I actually ran that last cable while the video was uploading and compressing and all that. Sunday morning, my sister and I had planned on doing some chainsaw work and brush clearing and cutting back of tree branches and stuff like that. Basically 25 to 30 years of growth that was trying to approach from the fields, which were a farmer rents from us, and we wanted to make sure he could get right up on the edge where he needed to be. So I think we spent 5 hours doing that. It was supposed to rain. It didn't rain. Got that done, and I feel, man, beat up bad. Got back to the house, showered, relaxed. And, you know, I found some channel on YouTube. It's a sailing show. I'm not into sailing, but I like these, like, life stories of people that do these, like, they sell their houses and they're, you know, and take their kids and load up and just go. And it was pretty remarkable. I think it's called Zatara is the name of the, I think if you search for Zatara, that's what, it's just an absolutely incredible, you got to go way back. Don't start the current date, but go back all the way to the beginning, like 3 years ago, and you'll have binge watching for a couple of weeks on that. Some of the stuff is a little repetitive, but the characters in the show are in that YouTube channel are pretty awesome. So as binge watching that a bit, doing some paperwork in the meantime and a whole bunch of other stuff. But I also have got stuff that I shipped with me here from Hawaii to Michigan. I basically have all our VHS tapes, all our Hi8, everything that we have shot over the years that is still in analog, and along with some DVD stuff as well. So I've been kind of delaying getting into some of that, but my goal is to digitize everything and then trying to figure out how to organize it. So I'm just kind of looking how to organize that. And really what I have found is, and I didn't have a NAS at the house or at the studio. And I have one here at the studio, don't have one at the loft. So I was just trying to figure out, okay, how am I going to organize this stuff? Cause I'm going to rip it and it's all going to be good. And then I'm just going to be ended up with, you know, 800 video files with no metadata or anything else. So I plan, what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a little 2-drive Plex server and put like 2 big drives in, but 2 10 terabyte drives in each of the slots. And that way I'll have 10 terabytes of storage to start doing some of this. And I've got a 2-slot drive here I can already use. I just needed the hard drives. So I'm going to run a Plex server, and I can use it for ripping videos and stuff too, but I'm primarily going to use it for the home project, the home video project, and a lot of work to be done there. But I was reading up on a bunch of stuff. I've learned how you can have an audiobook server. There's so much stuff you can do now that I really never paid attention to. So if any of you have run a Plex server before, I'd love to hear your thoughts on what you're encoding your videos in. If you've put ebooks or, you know, stuff that you're reading with your devices, with your Kindles and that type of stuff. If you've ever, you know, I've been looking for sources for books and, you know, build a library repository type thing. It's kind of intriguing, and it'll probably take me 2 years to get all these videos I need to get encoded. It's going to take a while, but I've got the gear to be able to do that. I'm starting with the VHS tapes first, then I'm going to go to the Hi8. Basically, the older the medium, that's what I'm going to do the conversion first. So that's kind of what maybe I can do, you know, set that up to run one. I have a older laptop, my XPS at home, that I'm going to use that to use as the machine that's going to rip the videos and save them so that we can have a digital archive of all this stuff instead of sending it all off and spending thousands of dollars and have someone else do it. I'm going to, you know, attempt and to have it organized. So if you've done anything like that with home videos and organized it and actually got your stuff digitized, love to hear how you've really managed it in the workflow and any type of software or hardware tools that you've used. I have basically everything I need. I just need to get her done. So that's what's kind of in the plan and some of the stuff I've been doing. So I cover everything I'm going to talk about here. Yes, it's cold here. So what I want to do before we get into the content, a little bit different tonight, is I'm going to play this audio file. And it's from one of our longtime listeners of the show. And I'm going to turn that audio off because I'm getting audio somewhere. Where's the audio coming from? because I'm using it. Is that all right? That's okay. Let me turn off that. Audio's turned off there. So where am I hearing audio coming in? Audio's turned off there. This is supposed to work.
And some of the stuff I've been doing. So I cover everything.
All right. So Facebook video audio is off. Here. So this is annoying me right now because, all right, let me close that. Is this audio shut off? One of these is giving me, I'm hearing audio feedback from the show. And I'm wondering if that's coming. Okay, there. Let's turn this audio off. But that was it right there. Aha. Now let me try. There we go. That's what I found it. So let me go ahead and play this audio clip. And it's about the Who. And we tried to do it the last show, and there was quite a bit of editing done. And I just didn't get it done. So let's go ahead and play this.
Hi, Todd. It's Andrew here from the UK. Todd, you asked at the end of the last show what we thought of the WHO. Well, I think we should thank our lucky stars that we have an organisation like the WHO. Now, I'm sure it has its problems. What organisation doesn't? But given the subsequent support given by other world leaders, I think we can be reasonably confident that President Trump's comments are more about political misdirection than anything else. Don't look over here, says Trump. Look over there. And the US media duly did. So let's think about the WHO. It's a $2 billion organization. That's $2 billion to do all its work throughout the world. Vaccination programs, malaria prevention, health education. Now, I work for a healthcare organization here in the UK that looks after a city of 350,000 people. Okay, so 350,000 people. And it has a budget of $1.6 billion. So that's a pretty shocking comparison against something that has world in its job title. Now, the WHO has a fine line to tread. For starters, they're not like nuclear inspectors who can just turn up whenever and wherever they want. They have to be invited in to investigate. And at times, they have to use diplomacy to gain access. And if that means a bit of sucking up to China to get in, then that's what they'll do. President Trump isn't above a bit of diplomatic praise either, lavishing it on President Putin and the leader of North Korea. But the difference is that he also has a stick, which he has used on several occasions too, like sanctions. The WHO doesn't have a stick. It can't sanction or fine a country. It's just not in its power. Also, the WHO has to be pretty sure of what's going on. It can't cry wolf too often, otherwise it will lose credibility. So it has to be sure of its ground before an epidemic becomes a pandemic. It can also only provide advice and guidance, which it has done continuously. And it's up to individual countries to implement their own action plans. And if they want to ignore the advice like the UK did, they can. So you can very easily look back at the timeline of events and see that China did not act as quickly as it could to alert the WHO to the problem and allow access to the epidemic in Wuhan. Now, instead of pointing the finger at the WHO, what President Trump should be saying is that it's clear from the current emergency that the role of the WHO needs to be strengthened, and that after this pandemic has been defeated, I will be working with other world leaders to ensure that the WHO is given the tools needed to do its job more effectively. Never again will a single country be able to hide the start of a global catastrophe with such ease. It'll be beautiful. So that's my take on the WHO, a respected global organisation unfairly maligned by a politician who wants to divert blame from problems at home. Thanks very much. Bye.
Hey, thanks for the input. And I guess I have a little bit of a different perspective. And maybe it's American-centric, and maybe not everyone will agree with this, and that's fine. But I think one thing we have to look at is the WHO failed. Just straight up, they failed in this endeavor. We also have to understand the politics at play. The WHO is not an independent organization. It hasn't never been designed to be an independent organization. And it's subject to the whims of nations that fund it and who chooses leaders. And in 2017, China really moved aggressively to elect its current leadership. Much of the folks that are on the leadership positions of the WHO were pushed forth by China in a big way. Now, the WHO would not normally have tweeted as late as January 14th that their indications that were conducted by the Chinese authorities showed no human-to-human transmission. But the simple fact of the matter is that was false. That information was false because they had already heard from Hong Kong and Taiwan that there had been human-to-human transmission before January 14th. So the WHO had already had information, again, from Taiwan and Hong Kong. And so we know the Chinese-Taiwan relationship is not a good one. There's lots of political stuff going on there. And because China helped pick who was going to be on the leadership or helped push who was going to be on leadership of the WHO, this definitely caused part of the reason for the delay in reporting. If the WHO had taken that information from Taiwan and Hong Kong and announced on January 14th that there was human-to-human transmission, the whole situation, which they were aware of, would have been much different. They could have even said possible human-to-human transmission. Now, the WHO waited until January 22nd, 8 days, 8 days to confirm human-to-human transmission. And this is after China finally did themselves as well. But at that point, travel was already going on. And we can also take an additional step that by January 22nd, there was 114 countries that already had reported cases. By January 22nd, excuse me, that there were already 114 countries. If that doesn't qualify as a pandemic, why did they wait until February to announce it as a pandemic? So I think the real situation here is that there's two things that happened. One, they knew early, at least 8 days, and we also know now by latest news reports that there were, Chinese influence through a phone call, according to German intelligence, that the Chinese pushed the WHO not to report human-to-human transmission. Not American intelligence, German intelligence. Now, if Germany's talking about it, you almost be guaranteed that the United States knows about that information too, because Germany and America share intelligence information. They're part of that small group of countries that do. And so if we think back to when the president said, I'm going to defund the WHO, it's because they have been duly influenced by the Chinese in a negative way. And we just know it's just about absolute fact now, and we'll see over time where this falls out, that China really made a big mistake here. This got out of hand. But yet at the same time, they closed travel from Wuhan to any other place in China, yet allowed international travel to leave and go into Wuhan this entire time. Reports today are that the state of Ohio has already said we had COVID-19 as early as January. So because of antibody tests that are being done. So let's just put some stuff into perspective here that the WHO is partially to blame for this worldwide pandemic and worldwide spread because they were slow to the switch. It's my belief. I think it's colossal errors on many people's fault, but I think primarily the Chinese, that's 90% of it, and 10% on the WHO, who failed to do the job that they were supposed to do. And we also need to look at the WHO's budget. If you've ever looked at the WHO's budget, about the amount of money that they spend and how their budget breakdown is, I think you might be surprised how much of that goes to travel and luxury hotel and first-class airfares across the world as well. So I'm at this point continue to be not a big fan of the WHO and it's my personal opinion that what they have done and what the Chinese have done, and I will stick by this furthermore, is that they are largely to blame to a lot of what's happened in the in this whole worldwide pandemic. And so again, WHO should not have waited until January 22nd to confirm human-to-human transmission after China finally did, having had evidence from both Hong Kong and also evidence from Taiwan, and also having evidence about the doctor who tried to spread the information about what was going on with this virus, who somehow has disappeared. You know, that guy that's probably got two bullets to the back of the head and is dead in some ditch somewhere. You know, so let's be clear here that the WHO has undue Chinese influence, and there has to be massive change, and people have to be held to account for them to once again regain the trust of many countries across the world. They may do a lot of great work, but they failed in the most important work that they need to have ever done. And it is what it is. So, yes, each country's got to do their own due diligence, but this is what that organization was set up to do and to be, and to be able to warn the world and provide accurate information instead of being a political tool of the Chinese, which in this instance, they were, undoubtedly, in my opinion. Okay. So we can agree to disagree, but that's my take on it. And thank you for your audio input. That's the kind of stuff we need on this show. If you have your own commentary, geeknews@gmail.com. All right, let's get into the stack. We've got a good stack of stuff today. And I think that a lot of this leads back. It's amazing how stuff I'm thinking about, and it's like over the weekend, pops up as it's maybe I've seen something in the news and I just glanced over it, and then Kirk found it later and it triggers me. Who knows? But I've got one of those coming up, and we'll talk about it here in a second. Elon Musk defies coronavirus order and asked to be arrested. He basically says he's reopening his company's car factory in California in violation of the local shelter-in-place order. Musk said he'll be in the he'll be on the company's production line this week. If anyone is arrested, I ask that it only be me, he wrote. Musk spent part of the weekend rallying against the order, which was put in place in mid-March by Alameda County. In order to mitigate COVID-19, the order restricted all but essential businesses from performing anything other than the most minimal operations. Musk has argued that the statewide stay-at-home order put in place by the governor left room for Tesla's auto manufacturing plant to remain open, and Tesla filed a lawsuit against the county on Saturday. On Monday, Newsom said that the state has a very constructive conversation with county officials. So let me read that again. On Monday, Newsom said that the state had a very constructive conversation with the county officials and Tesla representatives, and hoped the company could open up as early as next week. But basically, he started making cars over the weekend. He told all employees that he'd placed on furlough to get ready to go back to work. Those employees have been told they can stay home if they feel uncomfortable, but have to take unpaid leave in order to do so. Tesla cashed out many employees' paid leave after extending the furlough last month. Other automakers like General Ford and General Motors are scheduled to start up later this month. So he's got cars to deliver. He thinks he can keep his employees safe. So we'll see what happens here and if he gets arrested. Now, I continue to contend that in my community, if Walmart and Myers can be open, why can't everyone else be open? You know, why can't a small business that's going to have less density going into it than Walmart be open? It's so stupid. Local shoe store here in town, one or two customers in there, maybe five customers in there all day, 10 maybe. Why can't they open up and sell shoes? You know, it's just so, some of this stuff is so dumb at this point. If the big stores can open up and continue to have record earnings and sales, why can't small? Yes, I understand restaurants. Yes, maybe I understand barbers and salons and that kind of stuff, even though it seems to be George is doing so far so good and opening up. And by the way, it's been 2 weeks since they went to phase one. They're ready, you're ready to go to phase two. And their numbers are down. And so we'll see. We'll see what happens if this grand experiment. But why not let these businesses be open? You know, why can't car dealers meet with the potential people that are... Have you ever been to a car showroom and seen a lot of people? No, it's, you know, you got three, four salesmen, you've got the manager, and then you've got, you know, three, four customers maybe running around. Open this thing back up. Let's go. You know, it's, and if you don't want to come out, stay home. But it's dumb. You go to Walmart, you go to Myers, but you won't go to a shoe store or something like that. It's, and they're closed. This is bearing on insanity. Again, if you're watching on Facebook, make sure you say hi. If you're on the YouTube live stream, I hope you'll say hello there as well. I'll kind of switch back and forth and check that periodically. Now, speaking of the World Health Organization, they're going to launch a COVID-19 app for countries that don't make their own. It may even offer contact tracing for under-resourced countries. So here in the state of Michigan, they have 2,500 people that are going to do contact tracing. 2,500. Seems like a pretty decent number. I don't know how many counties are in Michigan. Let me see here. Counties in Michigan. Let me look here. Counties in Michigan. So we've got how many? I should have said how many counties in Michigan. How many counties in Michigan? Oh, there's 83 counties. So if we take, and I know they're not going to do this. They're going to definitely focus on higher density populated areas. But if we take 2,500 and divide that by 83, that means there's going to be 30 contact tracing, approximately 30 people per county. Now, Detroit's going to need a couple hundred. Lansing's going to need more. You know, some of the bigger, and, you know, my area might need two or three. You know, I think we've got 53 cases right now, or, you know, that's what's been over the time. So I think we got enough people to do contact tracing here in this state, you know. So, you know, if you do a one-to-one, you know, if one person does contact tracing of every victim, does that get it done? Especially if you're on the phone, you know, maybe you can, you know, one person can do more than one patient. But anyway, we're going to see what happens here. Would you use the World Health Organization app? I wonder if China helped them make this app. That'd be an interesting question. Who coded your app there, who? I think that should be on that should be a disclosure. I bet you $100 it was a Chinese company that coded the Who's app. Oh, my goodness. All right. Let's talk about something more positive. Former astronaut and SpaceX consultant on creating a new crewed spacecraft, we were really the underdogs. And this is a great interview. It's with former NASA astronaut Garrett Reisman. He doesn't work for SpaceX anymore, but he did for a considerable amount of time. He left SpaceX in 2018 to become a professor at the University of Southern California, but he made contact with the company. He's going to be watching his crewed flight, which he was largely in charge of up until that he was doing all the basically uncrewed lifts and everything else. Great interview. This is really a great interview from The Verge. It's one of the best ones I've read in weeks. And it talks about his transition from being an astronaut on the space shuttle to working for SpaceX and then getting, you know, basically the resupply missions and now going to be the first company, knock on wood, to safely deliver two astronauts to the International Space Station, put America back in the human lift business of taking our own citizens to the International Space Station instead of having to rely on the Soyuz program with the Russians. So, this is a great interview, and I'm be honest with you, I'm really, really excited about this upcoming launch on May 27th. It's 16 days away from this recording, and definitely probably going to have a watch party of some sort on Facebook to watch this launch. So hopefully the weather's good, and they'll be able to kick the tires and light the fires and get two guys to the International Space Station. Hey, Brad. Hey, Gary. Hey, thanks for saying hello. Oh, Bradley always saying, fudge no to the WHO app. Well, don't worry. We have in America, we'll have our own. Don't worry. So a great article. Link will be up in the show notes. When I read something, this headline today, I immediately thought Matrix. And here's the headline. Now see if you make the, I've already spoiled it, but see how I made this connection. Microsoft and Intel turn malware into images to help spot more threats. Now, you think about that title. Microsoft and Intel turn malware into images to spot more threats. Now, you know, what did the Matrix have? This running down thing of code, right, where they could almost see into the Matrix, right? Interesting how history says they're doing a novel approach to classifying malware. They're visualizing it. They're collaborating on what's called static malware as image network analysis, a project that turns rogue code into grayscale images so that a deep learning system can study them. The approach converts the binary form of an input file into a simple stream of pixels and turns that into a picture with dimensions that vary depending on aspects like file size. A trained neural network then determines what, if anything, has infected the file. Now, ZDNet noted that the AI is trained on a huge amount of data Microsoft has collected from the Windows Defender's installation. The technology doesn't need full-size pixel-by-pixel recreation of viruses, which makes sense when large malware could easily translate to gigantic pictures. So far, STAMA has proven effective with just over 99% accuracy in classifying malware. And as a false positive rate, slightly under 2.6%. However, it has its limits. It works well with small files, but it struggles with larger ones. Now, think about what they're doing here. They're creating an image of the malware code. And you would think probably a lot of malware code probably resembles, is pretty similar in methodology and in coding. And it uses this AI to look for that. Does that sound like the beginning of the Matrix? Does that make you go, just a little bit? It's not a complete comparison, but it does make you say and make you think, Now, I know there's a lot of coders out there that can just read code and almost just like instantly come up with a picture of what's going on with the application. And that's pretty remarkable to me as well. So I guess if a human can do it, so can a supposed AI. Hackers have sold over 73 million user stolen user records on the dark web. This includes over 30 million from dating site Zusk. I've got a great story about Zusk and how they spent $25,000 in podcast advertising on a deal that I told them not to spend the money on. And it's a great story on stupidity. From many years ago. Oh my goodness. But on Saturday, I got a LifeLock notification. And it didn't come as a complete surprise because my Shoko had opened up a checking account for Chris. He had a savings account, opened up a checking account, put my name on it, and so that he could get a debit card. Tired of getting him, having to get prepaid cards. And so I just, open the checking account and then he'll be able to use a debit card. And so when I got that alert, it just really proved to me that LifeLock is really one of those tools that if you can afford it, it's really, really great tool. I'm really impressed with it. It recognized within about eight, it gave, sent me the alert about 18 hours in. So the account had been set up for Friday night or late Friday. And then I got the alert Saturday afternoon, which would have been like real early in the morning, Honolulu time. So pretty fast response. And it told me which bank and gave me the last four digits of the account. So if I did, if this had been some other bank off into some other location, I could have basically called them and say, hey, here's who I am. Here's the last four digits of the account. I think I'm basically got identity theft going on. So was really impressed to see that that work, because I often get from that company, I often get the dark web notifications when my email address pops up in some database breach. I get those in on a regular basis. Oftentimes I've known about that breach 2 or 3 days in advance of the actual notification I get from LifeLock. But the banking response was pretty impressive. So for any of you that looked at that service, and I don't get a dime from LifeLock. They're owned by Norton now, so or Symantec. So I don't know what it cost. I'm on their plan. It's not inexpensive, but being that I do a lot of stuff online, I've chosen to have it for a number of years. And this is the first real, like, true pop on the alert that I've worried about. Not only do that, I use a credit monitoring service as well. Tied to watch my credit and see if you know any new credit cards are opened up. LifeLock is supposed to announce that stuff well, but they do it best for bank accounts. So ebooks, I'm a big fan of ebooks. But there's a, you know, I've always went to Amazon. I have that program with Amazon where I can have 10 books checked out at once. But there's many of you are not in a position to do that. So, but there's a lot of ebooks available for free, and libraries are closed right now, so you really can't get access to ebooks. And there's actually some tools out there, some software tools out there that if you download ebooks, just like I'm going to get ready to start organizing my videos, you can actually organize stuff. You can organize ebooks as well. There's some applications out there for that. But there's a lot of stuff that's available, huge libraries of data that you basically can load and save in your, maybe your network attached storage device as well. You know, I use that, there's, and you can get cheap readers, you know, base Kindle or Paperwhite or Oasis. Kindle Unlimited is a service I use, and it's an annual subscription, I think $45 annually. You know, most library systems don't actually manage their own digital content offerings, and they're run by other services like OneDrive. But the Internet Archive launch was called the National Emergency Library. It's a temporary collection of books that support emergency remote teaching. So it just goes on and on and on. And being able to get a lot of different books that are available through the Open Library and Project Gutenberg. There's 60,000 ebook and Kindle titles, most of which are no longer covered by U.S. copyright laws. Now, you just can't go out and rip stuff because authors deserve to get paid. Many books offers a mix of classic and contemporary, some 50,000 titles strong as well. So, you know, if you wanted to, all the new stuff, you're going to probably have to go on Kindle Unlimited. But if you want to get access to audio books as well, there's obviously Audible that's out there. I'm not a big fan of audiobooks, but I'm not familiar with too much free resources for audiobooks. But so there's another site called Bookshop. This site acts as a middleman between customers and their local independent bookstores. Simply find the nearest shop to your house and order away. It's a the full profit from every order is passed on to the shop, and so far more than $1.2 million has been raised through the site. You're going to have to pay for the book, but it'll help ensure that your bookstore is still around once your shelter-in-place order is lifted, and you get digital copies of that that you can own and put in your library. And, you know, you can still lend books. Just remember that. That's legal to lend books. And I think that's the same in the e-world as it is in the paper world. Anyway, lots of stuff out there that's cool. All right. Thunderbolt, there's a flaw that lets hackers steal your data in 5 minutes. Hackers with access can grab encrypted data even if you lock your PC. Ooh, interesting. So this is by, via Wired. Using a relative simple technique called ThunderSpy, someone with a physical access to your machine could nab your data. Thunderbolt offers extremely fast transfer speeds by giving device direct access to your PC memory. So researchers previously thought those weaknesses dubbed Thunderclap could be mitigated by disallowing access to untrusted devices or disabling Thunderbolt altogether. But allowing a display port and USB access gives a way in. So if you tend to use Thunderbolt connectivity, we strongly recommend connect only to your own Thunderbolt peripherals. Never lend them to anybody. Avoid leaving your system unattended. Even when screen locked, avoid leaving your Thunderbolt peripherals unattended. Ensure appropriate physical security when storing your system and any Thunderbolt devices, including Thunderbolt powered displays. Consider using hibernation, suspended disk, or powering off the system completely to avoid them being able to get in. So the TAC only requires $400 worth of gear, including an SBI programmer and a $200 Thunderbolt peripheral. They'll think the whole thing could be built into a single small device. And of course, your government agencies will probably be buying these and sucking the stuff off people's drives that are affect, you know, they got a search warrant or whatever. Intel has confirmed that the attack doesn't work on computers that do have kernel DMA protection enabled. Kernel DMA protection. This attack could not be successfully demonstrated in systems with kernel DMA protection enabled. So this must be a BIOS setting. So again, maybe look up kernel DMA protection for your machines. So this is a pretty big flaw for the old Thunderbolt port. Maybe your computer doesn't even have one, or maybe it has multiple. The great basic article here, if you're new to PCs, the best way to update Windows 10 and all of your apps. There's a good article here on that. It's a real simple instructions for those of you that may not know that on a Windows machine. Link will be in the show notes. There is some Samsung Galaxy Note 20 news and leaks. So they've got some information about specs. They know there's going to be two models. They're going to obviously have 5G, potentially three cameras on the back, edge-to-edge screen, of course. They're going to have the latest Qualcomm processor on the Snapdragon 865. You're going to have at least 12 gigs of RAM. If you live in a country where Samsung phones get the Exynos chips instead of Qualcomm ones, word on the street that the Note 20 will get an Exynos 9992 processor. I've never even heard of that processor. But anyway, if you want information on the Note 20, link will be up in the show notes for you to check out. And again, if you're watching on the live stream, make sure you say hi. I want to hear from you. Tofan, thanks so much. Yes, I agree with Elon. Absolutely. I believe that he should open up, and he's already told his employees, you don't want to come to work, don't come to work, but go ahead. People got to eat. Cars got to get delivered. Have you heard the statistics? Most people who are working in factories are not in their 80s. Yes, we understand. Younger people can get sick and die too. Understand that. Genesis, yeah, the Genesis car. Well, they launched a concierge service with home delivery and personal shopper. So you can have a new Genesis delivered anywhere you want while a personal shopper walks you through every step. So if you express interest online and provide contact information, a personal shopper will reach out by phone, text, or email based on your preference. They become your personal tour guide, aka your sales rep. Should you pull the trigger, the personal shopper sets everything up, including the vehicle delivery. Meanwhile, the shopper works with the local dealership to handle the behind-the-scenes elements. You won't have to work with a dealer whatsoever. The program kicks off today at participating Genesis dealers. The Korean luxury brand to the growing roster of marquees ready to serve drivers from the comfort of their home. So most companies will, you know, Ford. I don't need a new Ford, but you know, the Ford dealer called me and said, hey, you ready to upgrade that car? And I'm like, I haven't even had it a year. Call me when I'm ready for the wheels to fall off, and then we'll talk about another vehicle, another 10 years. So, hey, one thing about this whole situation, my mileage is like way down. My monthly, you know, I was racking up pretty good mileage on that vehicle. I was already up to 14,000 miles when this whole thing started. And I think I put 250 miles on the vehicle since we've been in lockdown here for 8 or 9 weeks. That's probably more miles than many of you put on your vehicles. Intel and Penn Medicine are developing an AI to spot brain tumors. They'll use data from the world while keeping patient info secure. Yep, right. We've seen AI outperform doctors in spotting breast cancer, lung cancer, and skin cancer. Now, research from Intel and University of Pennsylvania turning their attention to brain tumors using Intel's AI hardware and software. Penn Medicine will lead 29 international healthcare and research institutions in creating an AI model. The project is based on a technique called federated learning, which trains a algorithm across decentralized servers so the hospitals can work together without actually sharing patient data. This will allow the institutions from the United States, Canada, UK, Germany, Netherlands, Switzerland, India to create a much larger data set than any one institution would be able to do on its own. So the project is being funded through a 3-year, $1.2 million grant from the National Institute of Health, NIH, which we continue to hear about these types of organizations a lot. CNET is reporting Mars might be full of puddles, but they're too cold to support life. New research suggests salty brine puddles are more abundant on the surface of Mars than expected, but life is unlike to survive within. You know, talking about salty brine, twice now I have been in the shower when my water softener, conditioner, has kick tanks and they do a flush. So it uses salt water. It's one of those type of systems out, you know, salt, not salt water. And nothing worse than getting that changeover because you get hit with like the most concentrated salt nastiness ever. It's just for like 5 seconds, but I've twice in a row. and it switches tanks every 600 gallons of processed water. Oh, so bad. So when I think about brine patches on Mars, yeah, you're not going to process that very well. And of course, Mars is severely lacking in flowing water. But there's definitely indications that there are some stuff very close to the surface. And the surface may allow pools of very salty liquid to form in some regions. Not like you're going to be drinking any of that anytime soon. But anyway, good article about this. Link up in the show notes. If you have an Android device and you're a little intimidated and your device is not warning you that it needs to update, maybe you should initiate a check. You don't know how to do that, this article gives you a lot of the instructions on how to find that software update link in your Android device and make sure you turn it on to auto update. So if it isn't turned on already, but we all know that if you've got a Google Pixel phone, they all get the updates first and then other carriers follow along in due course. But so anyway, some good instructions on how to update your Android phone if you have one. Now, this is a product. I'll be honest with you. Have you guys seen the Dyson? I'll show you pictures of this. This is from Android Central. I don't think this is a Dyson product. It's called Roborock. Has been making a name for itself in robotic vacuum market. It's one of those where you have it's a self-contained unit. You carry it around. It's not like it's got a big tank or anything. It's got a battery that runs it. So the one that we had bought from Dyson, absolute piece of crap. Biggest piece of crap vacuum I've ever seen. So I have huge doubts on these types of vacuums really doing a good job. But this thing's getting a great, this one called Roborock is getting a great review. And again, I'm not a big fan of these just because of what I've seen from the Dyson one. just really didn't do a good job. But here's the challenge with this. This thing's $450. Now, I went cheap. In the loft, I've got a Walmart special vacuum from, I don't know, some company. I think it cost me $110. That thing, I've had a standard Dyson vacuum for years. We had a Dyson, wore it out, replaced the Dyson, and the second one's almost wore out. It's a thing we've used the living piss out of them. And then I bought a Drobo, one of those, drives around by itself, vacuums. It does an okay job, but sometimes I just need a regular vacuum to run through and hit it real heavy on I've got a lot of throw rugs and that type of stuff. And I'll be honest with you, that cheap one from that Walmart special, works fantastic. I would never buy another Dyson vacuum at this point. And the cost, no way. I would never buy one of these expensive $450 ones when I can buy something that's $100, has incredible suction, and the thing looks cool, but that $100-some Walmart special, I tell you, gets the job done in a big way, at least in my environment. And I don't follow the Japanese rules in a loft. I chomp right in with my shoes on, walk around, then take my shoes off later and, you know, probably track all kinds of dirt in, but, not a big fan of this particular vacuum. But anybody own a Roborock $450 stick vacuum? NASA is pushing for a 2024 moon landing. May sound crazy, but they're giving it its best shot. Space Agency Chief is making smart decisions about the lunar program, and they're going for 2024. So we'll see what happens. They say if our current contractors can meet these objectives, we will find, if they can't, we will find ones that will. Wow. So we'll see if they can get back to the moon by 2024. Hey, put SpaceX in charge. They'll get her done. If you like The Mandalorian, The Mandalorian's second season will not be delayed, says Disney CEO. So new Mandalorian episodes are still scheduled for October. Please make them longer than 20 minutes. Come on, give us something more to chew on. Google and Mount Sinai are using Nest Cams to remotely monitor COVID-19 patients. Their special setup reduced risk for healthcare workers. So that's interesting. They're rolling out a new system that uses two Nest Cams per room for monitoring, one to check out and one to interact with patients, and one to monitor vitals. Special built consoles at nurses' stations let healthcare workers oversee their patients, respond to some requests without having to don safety gear. Okay. Are there going to be cameras in all hotel rooms? I mean, not hotel, all hospital rooms going forward? Seems like a huge, even though you're in the hospital, you are afforded some privacy. But I understand the COVID situation, but they're putting cameras in your room. There ought to be a way to tell when, or some announcement that we're turning on monitoring. I don't know. What do you think about this? Healthcare workers are probably excited that they can have two cameras in a room and watch a patient. But if I was the patient and I wasn't on a ventilator, I think I would have concerns about privacy. But, what say you? Would you be cool having two cameras monitoring in your room? Twitter's going to be adding labels to tweets with misleading COVID-19 claims. I wonder how they decide what's misleading or not. Because Facebook sure has kind of cracked down on stuff. You know, and people are using code words now to talk about COVID-19. They're using all kinds of strange acronyms to speak to it. I'm sure they're probably building a database of those as well, because so many people have had posts taken down because of community standard guidelines. All right. Sadly, you know, I'm not necessarily in agreement with everything my governor's doing here, but there's an article on Metro Times saying the governor has become a target of dozens of threats on private Facebook groups ahead of a armed rally in Lansing. You know, again, I don't know why we need to go up there. It's okay to go up there and protest, but we need to take all our guns up there. And I believe in this Second Amendment, but anyway, Metro Times gained access to four private Facebook groups. The pages have combined 400,000 members, but apparently there's some stuff that is, you know, you may not like your elected official, but that's what elections are for. So, what you say online can come back and hurt you. Another space news, stunning high-res photos of Jupiter find holes in the Great Red Spot. So they're actually, it's kind of like it almost looks like a pumpkin with holes cut in it. That's what they're saying. It kind of is like, so it's kind of interesting. But anyway, article will be up in the show notes. Also, there's an article about what's new on Netflix for May 11th. That list will be in the show notes. Qualcomm has announced a new Snapdragon 768G 5G processor. This is an upgraded version of the Snapdragon 765G. So 768G 5G processors coming from Qualcomm. How many of you are familiar with Newton Mail? Newton Mail is going to be saved by fans after it was saved and shut down again by Essential. Proton Mail is another premium one that's out there I'm familiar with. Microsoft Outlook on the web is getting a Gmail-like text prediction feature. And I tell you, sometimes I kind of like this on Gmail. Saves me two or three words here or there. All right, so about ready to wrap up today's show. Got a little bit of a stomach ache going on here tonight. It's just cropped up here in the last 20 minutes or so. Let me read this comment. It came in from Jim. He said, "Hey, dear Todd, in your reply to Chris's email at the end of 1444, you are right on the money. Excellent reply, absolutely perfect. No leader could deal with this pandemic any better, and no leader can tell the future. Shutting down travel from another country is not something to be taken lightly. It takes guts to make such a decision. I don't think that any other recent leaders would have had the guts to do it. Also, it's important to note that the previous administration failed to replenish respirators and strategic national stockpile." Hey, but Jim, that goes back many administrations, not just the Obama. Others had done failures too. In 2009, the previous administration drew 97 million masks to deal with the H1N1 swine flu pandemic, but it was over failed to fully restock the respirators. He says, "Our country is crazy. Divided by politics, it's like a fire breaks out in an airplane and one person starts fighting the fire. Then the rest of the pastors stand around criticizing how he is fighting in it and trying to distract him. Hell, it would be better to jump in and help. One would get more approval that way and save a doomed airplane and yourself. But no, rather than helping the country fighting itself, just nuts. If we work together on this, we could overcome it easily. Every single person in the world should work on this and contribute to helping. Forwarding one single nasty comment is destructive to the self and others and not productive. Okay, I'm off my soapbox now. Great show. Love it. Rock on, Jim." And so he provided me a link to, and I'm not going to link to the previous administration's failure. All previous administrations failed. No one was prepared for this. Regardless of what anyone says, it's just impossible to prepare for something like this. But I bet they will be now. I don't know if I read this. Todd, you asked on 1444 to hear from teachers. I'm a teacher in Pennsylvania, and this is from Donna. So I hope it's okay to say her name. Yep. You asked on show 1444 to hear from teachers. I'm a teacher in Pennsylvania. I've over 30 years of experience. I teach in a Title I school district that provides breakfast and lunch to every student, which means that over 85% of our students qualify for free and reduced lunch program. The district has just under 18,000 students. Our last day in classes was March 11th. Prior to March 12th, not all of our classes had access to technology. I'm a family and consumer science teacher, what used to be called home economics. I have a cart of 30 laptops to share with two other teachers in my department. Laptops do not have all the batteries that work, so when I want all students to be online, I have to have them plugged in, and there aren't outlets at the tables where the students sit. I can't move all the tables to the outlets either. The buildings have Wi-Fi installed, and only district devices can connect to it. Often the students have more updated technology in their pocket than I can offer them. It's a sad situation, Donna. Since the school shut down, we've gone to online learning. We have been distributing Chromebooks and putting out Wi-Fi hotspots. We have 5,000 more Chromebooks on order. The money to pay for those were raised through private funds. We hope to start distributing them next week. As I understand, part of the order has arrived. That will be 2 months after we stop meeting in the building. Since that time, the district will be receiving $9.8 million emergency funds through the Federal CARES Act and the Pennsylvania Department of Education. I know that we can never go back to the level of low-level accessibility that we had in March. Thank goodness for that. So now we need to start turning our attention to the future of education. This article popped up in my inbox, and I thought you might find it interesting. So it's entitled, Five Things School Should Still Do When This Is All Over. It certainly has given me some ideas to ponder, Donna. Donna, thanks for this. I appreciate you responding to the show, and I'm really excited to have read your email today. The local school district that I live in, don't work in, I think they're up to about 90 Wi-Fi hotspots, and they're doing the same thing. They're ordering more Chromebooks. We live in I've said it many times, live in a rural community. The town that the high school I went to is in, and the school that, again, the district, which is the Quincy High School District, Quincy Schools District in Quincy, Michigan. The town is very, very small. So it's a one-stoplight town. It probably, and I don't even know. Let me see if I can find out what the population of Quincy, Michigan is. I would say 1,000 or something, Quincy, Michigan. 1650. So what they define is 1,600 people that live in the village of Quincy as of the 2010 census. I can't imagine it's changed very much. And I live 7 miles south of that town. So the average class size is about 90 to 100 kids per grade. And so it's like 1,200, 1,300 kids in the entire school. So there was a very, very, very high percentage of those kids that even in where they lived in the rural America did not have connectivity that was even good on a cell phone. I'm lucky in the area that I live that we've got good cell phone reception and I've got access to an internet service. The tower that I connect to is 13 miles away. So from my house, maybe not 13, maybe like 9 or 10 from the way the crow flies, 9 or 10 miles from my house is the antenna or the tower I connect to for my internet. And lucky enough that I could get tower up high enough, and they were high enough where we can pretty much see each other, and I stay online. But that's not the, and it's expensive, $90 a month. And that's a big number for internet service for people that live in this community, rural community. $90 is a lot. So oftentimes, maybe all they have is a tablet that's connected via a mobile device. So it's a real issue. And if you live in the city and you got high-speed internet, you're golden. But out here in rural America, it's not the case. It really, really isn't. I had a lady come in to... my mom told me about a lady that came in next door. They've got Wi-Fi in there that's always on, available, passwords available. And she was trying to connect to the Wi-Fi just to see. There's a Big Lots. And that's, for those of you who don't know what a Big Lots is, Google it. There's a Big Lots that's literally 200 feet from my office door. And a lady came in and was on her tablet and get Wi-Fi so she could see what the Big Lots sales were you know, 200 feet away. So it's an issue, and it's education's going to, they're going to have to figure out ways around this and how to do it. So, Andrew, you missed it. We talked about, we played your spot early in the show. So it's played and responded to. Dre did it at the very, very beginning. So you'll get to hear my commentary. Yeah, so I got it all in here tonight, Andrew. Thanks for checking in. All right, so I think that's all I've got for email. And my upset stomach resolved itself. For a second there, I thought we were going to have an emergency. Oh, here's another one. Jim, you're hitting all cylinders. He says, I got this from Mozilla. Interesting that someone has a horse in the race and are doing this. Bad news bots, a study by Carnegie Mellon, found nearly half of the accounts talking about the coronavirus on Twitter are bots, not people, and those bots are pushing a ton of harmful disinformation. It's an article from Vice. So, Jim, we'll make sure that gets in the link. We'll make sure that, Donna, your article gets in the show as well. That's how you do it, folks. That's how you contribute to the show. We want to hear from you. Geeknews@gmail.com is the email address to send stuff to, geeknews@gmail.com. And appreciate your commentary tonight that makes the show a little more interesting as we go. We went the full hour and 10 minutes or so of the podcast. Thanks for being here, everyone. Definitely think about the sponsor at geeknewscentral.com. As you notice, I still got the new media show banners up for those of you who are live. Something I missed. I didn't switch out the graphics tonight, so I'm advertising the other show. But again, thanks. And if you want to, if you find the content of this show is productive to you and you like the content, consider becoming an insider at geeknewscentral.com/insider. $2, $5, $10, $15, $20, or $25 a month. You can get in at 6.7 cents a day at that $2 level. And hope that you consider becoming an insider. Definitely appreciate all of you that are contributing to the show. And those of you that aren't, definitely don't forget to promote our sponsor, GoDaddy, with your friends, family members, people you know. Every purchase on GoDaddy done using one of my promo codes is just like an in-store, not in-store, in-show donation. So, hey, everyone, thanks. And we've been on a roll here. I think this is the most number of shows I've done in a row in a number of years because of all my travel and everything else that's going on. So I was looking at the counter today and I said, huh, how long to get to the, you know, to the next level? 1,554 episodes left. Did the math there. We're definitely probably not going to make it by October. But anyway, hey, everyone, thanks. We'll see you next time here on the Geek News Central podcast. Everyone, take care. Be safe out there. And again, we are at the beginning of week 9 of the national lockdown. How long will it go? No one knows. This merry-go-round will continue for a while. Be safe. We'll see you next time here. Everyone, take care. And those of you who have been online watching the show from Facebook or on YouTube, thanks for being here. And I did get to mention the YouTube folks. Definitely appreciate you. Everyone, take care. See you next time. Bye-bye.